Hello. Welcome to Misadventures, a Gloomhaven podcast brought to you by Gamer Public Radio. The first portion of this episode contains spoilers for scenario number 4. The second portion of this episode contains spoilers for scenario number 93. The end of this episode contains spoilers for class number 17. I repeat, the end of this episode contains spoilers for class number 17. Please enjoy responsibly. So there we were, treasure map in hand, embarking upon the high seas. What will we find under the waters? Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Misadventures. Good to have you back along with us. We've got another exciting episode for you. This time, it's just going to be three of us. Garrett is here with us on the podcast, but he missed this session, so it was just Skip, Steve, and myself playing in this one. Good to have you back with us, and just as a reminder, I'm Casey. I'm playing Etu, the Brute.
I'm Garrett. I normally play Tanzanite Stone Chest, the Spellweaver.
This is Skip, and I am playing the Vermling Mind Thief, Skeevil the Shiv.
And this is Steve, and I'm playing as the Tinkerer, Bronstanimo the Firm.
Yes. Okay, so with the introductions out of the way, so the plan for this session initially was Garrett's character had unlocked some quests for his retirement goals. So that was a plan, but since he was not around, we figured it would be rude to do such. So
much
we
appreciated.
Went in, yeah, we went and did some side questing. So the plan initially was to go to the Crypt of the Damned, which we learned about early on in scenario number 1 or number 2. We learned about these other crypts out there. We're just getting around to those. But and we did. We did that first. But during a city event while we were kind of shopping around town, we discovered a treasure map that led to allegedly a shipwreck with booty. And that's a pretty strong draw. So we will wrap up the evening heading out to the high seas to go find some fat loot. We can go ahead and take you along with us to the Crypt of the Damned. So a couple of things about the Crypt of the Damned. Just a little sit rep before we kick in the doors, right? So we spawn and looking to see what we got. It is 4 rooms deep. The goal is just to kill all the enemies. We've got living bones, bandit archers, cultists, earth demons, and wind demons. One of the reasons, at least for me, that we I wasn't real interested in starting the scenario beforehand was because it just seemed like we were going to get more undead, which we do, but it's got earth demons and wind demons. I want to kill both of those things. I'm really excited about this scenario.
And going into this as well, I was kind of thirsty for elites at this point because of my life goal.
Yeah.
So I'm going to burn out earlier in these than I usually have, kind of chasing after that.
For me, it was when I realized how many different rooms there were and noticing two of them didn't connect, so we'd have to basically backtrack. I added in other cards that gave me more movement, especially the ones on top, because I knew I was going to have to run around as fast as I could just to catch up a lot of the times.
And kind of the opposite of Steve, knowing that the demons were what I was going to be going after and kind of seeing the group of enemies we had, I assumed they were probably going to be in the back couple of rooms. So I wanted to make sure I held on to some of my stronger cards later in the scenario. Also, I don't think any of us had seen cultists before. Yeah, I think this was our first time running into those guys. And they had a few surprises for us.
But we had what was in the first room again?
So the first room was a couple of elite living bones and then two normal archers. So kicking things off, of course, they have the living bones positioned in front of the archers, right? Mm-hmm. So I decided to go back there and say hello because it always seems effective to get a brute up in the ranged attacker's business, hopefully giving them disadvantage or at least taking some of that heavier fire. Because the living bones are nasty in that they can target two people, but they don't do a bunch of damage. Whereas the archers, if they land some good shots, can do a decent amount of damage. So I went back there to start tying those up while Skip and Steve, y'all started taking out the living bones, which are great for Steve because they were both elites.
Yeah. So that was one of the instances. I burned a card early. I used the net shooter to kind of lock them down because it immobilizes them. It's also a like multi-point attack. So I'm hitting three of them at a time and doing three damage, I believe. Yeah. To each one and getting experience in the same time. Yeah. So, yeah, that was an early burn for me.
I think for me, this is when I realized I really shouldn't try and tank at all. So when Casey jumped in the back, I ran to the side thinking, okay, he immobilized him. It didn't work out so well because I took a few hits that I was not ready for.
Luckily, there was one less person Steve had to worry about healing, so it worked out okay for you in the end. The second room was our first encounter with the cultists. There were three cultists in that room, one in the front, two in the back, and then we had three normal archers in the middle. So this was not a very exciting room for Steve. No elites in there.
They did have a surprise on that first card with Drew for the cultists.
They did. It really set the tone. I was expecting cultists to just be kind of squishy melee guys, right?
Yep.
They were, for the most part, but they have this ability where they explode if you kill them, which is really... it gets a little awkward, right? Because you want to kill them, but you also don't want them to AOE around you. So again, standard protocol, I went in to tie up the archers, and then we kind of tried to pick off the cultists as best we could from range, particularly when they had that AOE ability online. So, but Skip got a little bored with that encounter and went running off for reasons.
Yeah, it turned out to be my card to get the one checkbox on the perk. It was simply just to open a door, and I figured you guys handled that, even with an explosive charge waiting to hit everybody. So I opened it up, and I was not real thrilled with what was in the room, apart from the treasure chest.
Yeah, there was a treasure chest guarded by, what, two Earth demons?
Yes, there was. And, I believe my teammates told me to just go ahead and go on in and charge because you'll take the rest of it. And then Casey can come in. So I jumped in over the trap. And I think at that point, their draw wasn't as bad as it was. It could have been because they didn't move. They were probably just bunkering up. I'm not really sure. I can't remember exactly what happened there, but it gave me enough time to for them, Casey and them, to kill everybody and then come in and help me out because there was. After that first room, there was no way I could tank these guys.
Yeah, I was more than happy to come in and save you because that meant I got Earth Demon kills, and I needed one of those for my life goal. So that worked out great. And as an added bonus, Skip, you got to open a chest.
Yes, I did.
What was in that chest? Do you remember?
As we were fighting them, I decided to do my little thievery like setup, I guess, and I jumped past them all. Right onto the treasure chest, which exploded in my face with poison damage. That was the highlight of this round.
That's what you get for being a coward.
That's also when we realized that there were trap chests in this game. Lots of fun figuring that out. So after we cleaned our plate of some earth demons, we moved up to the final room of the encounter. And yep, as to be expected, we got some wind demons in there and a couple cultists as well.
We knew their game, though. They weren't a threat in that last room.
They weren't. I got excited, though, and jumped right in on that elite wind demon.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
Went to say hello because I needed a wind demon kill. I may have bit off more than I could chew. Like, I had no problems with the wind demon, but it kind of got in a situation where everything was trying to target me. And so I was, like, dancing around a pole a little bit. There's, like, a pillar in the middle of the room.
But, I mean, it bought enough time for us to come in and help.
Yeah. And I think y'all dropped a summon in there to kind of take some of the pressure off of me.
Yep.
Yeah, this is where my additional movement cards came in quick because you got up there really fast with your boots and everything. And my additional movements, they gave me three move and one attack on the top as well as my move four on the bottom. That got me up there quick enough to come in and drop a summon just to hopefully alleviate some of the punching you're going to get.
Yeah. So it got a little bit dicey for like a turn. We just had to figure out how best to I guess, salvage the situation. Once we got kind of set up in there, it ended pretty easily. There's also a treasure chest in there, which I was like, what are the odds of the second one in this scenario being trapped? Probably not great. So I went ahead and picked that up. And we actually got a decent item design out of there. I believe Skip went in and purchased it from the store later on.
Yeah.
So
I think if I remember right, I don't remember which, if it's this one or the next one, there was a pile of cash, just a pile of it. And I actually spent one of my turns to go and snag it because I knew with my life goal, I needed the money, but you know, it definitely doesn't hurt. So yeah, I got a, like 11 actual tokens or something of cash.
That was, that the, yeah, that was the next one that we'll, okay, we'll get to in a second. So yeah, we made pretty short work of this. And once again, you know, we make short work of a scenario and Garrett's not there for it.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's, really weird. It's like having four players spawns more creatures or something. I don't know.
Or you just play worse when I'm there. Cause the alternative is I hold the team back and I just can't imagine that's true.
Mr. Too Good for Gold. I'm sure that's never put you in a position where you couldn't reach a target in time or anything.
I honestly don't think it did. I'm pretty sure I've been able to like nimbly navigate my way around any situation where there were coins on the ground.
There's been a couple close calls.
I didn't have an example in mind. I was just hoping to leave it up to imagination. Everyone would just assume that's happened.
Oh no. Oh no.
So yeah, we return back to town victorious. And, you know, of course, as you do, you go shopping again.
We ran into something.
Yeah, we may have left a Vermling dead in the streets, which apparently people frown upon. But, you know, maybe don't try to steal from adventurers. Brutes are kind of big. And when he's got friends with him that can shoot arrows, yeah, maybe pick better targets, dude. That's a lesson he will never learn, though, because he's dead.
I wasn't happy with the choice on this because, you know, it's my kind. I didn't really want this to happen, but you know,
I was
outvoted.
I was on the fence.
I feel like if there was a do nothing option, Skip would choose that every single time.
Ignore this jackass and move on.
But no, we are.
We got our treasure group.
That's right.
It's go time.
That's right. Before we head off, though, after treasure, why don't we check in and see what's cooking this play session?
I believe, if I remember correctly, this was the crockpot lasagna.
It was.
And I don't really get full credit on this one because you kind of brought the recipe and all the ingredients and the crockpot.
Yeah. So the plan was to play this session at my house. And so I had this all ready to go. I had all the ingredients. I had the crock pot ready. It's one of the like ninja crock pots that has a couple different cook settings, which is why you could do this on here.
So but ninja, then there was a change of plans. Us.
That's right. Exactly. We had a change of plans. We had to end up going to play at Steve's. And so I just took it all with me because it was kind of a last minute thing. So we cooked lasagna in a crock pot and it took like half an hour and it was actually pretty good.
Pretty simple recipe too. Just kind of measure the stuff out, toss it all in there and leave it alone.
It was so good. Skip ate it and he apparently doesn't like ricotta cheese and this had all the ricotta cheese in it.
Yep.
Which is a new recurring segment of Skip liking foods that are made by people in our
That's right. If we're doing nothing else for the good of the world, we are branching Skip out in the culinary field.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I can't argue with that.
So in that way, we got some lasagna in our bellies and we headed out to the high seas.
That does not sound like I'm going to be on a boat food, like rocking and turning and belly full of lasagna. Like that's not good.
It was a lighter lasagna. It wasn't too bad.
Okay. All right.
Plus, I'm pretty sure the Tinkerer was steering the ship, and he seems like a very precise individual. He probably got us there fine.
Oh, yeah.
That's fair.
I've got all these gears and pulleys and stuff that, yeah.
So, Sunken Vessel has an enemy type we had not seen before, and I would prefer to never see again. And that is Lurkers ruin my day. Other than that, we had Frost Demons, Living Spirits. Again, it was a four room map, but a couple of the rooms were kind of small.
And this
so
one
I
was,
wasn't too.
Yeah, go ahead.
I wasn't too concerned about movement, but the second room has a lot of obstacles in it that was going to slow us down some. So it was an interesting setup.
And this one was like fully linear though, so it wasn't a branching path sort of like the last one.
Right. It was basically, it was like you started on a beach, basically, and then you go through a short cave or something and then get to the shipwreck. And yeah, in the first one, it was a weird, because it's only like 3 hexes long, and we were just needing to get across the top of it, 3 hexes. But you could spawn anywhere along the length of it, which was like 7 or 8 hexes deep. So, of course, we decided, well, first of all, we started the scenario immobilized. At least I did, because I don't ignore scenario effects. A couple of you do. Mm-hmm. But we decided to start as close to that door as possible and make the – and there was 3 lurkers in here, one of which was elite. And Steve, I think you just needed like 2 more elites to hit your life goal on this one, if I recall correctly.
Oh, yeah. So I was I think right off the bat, I called dibs on that elite in there.
Yeah, but we decided to go ahead and just move towards the door and let the lurkers come to us. And that worked out pretty well. What doesn't work out great is that lurkers have pierce and are just shredding through all my armor and making some of my cards not great for this whole encounter. And it was really annoying because I've got my hide armor and now it's just gone and it didn't actually do anything.
Yeah, because you had to burn the uses for that regardless of whether or not the shield did anything, right?
Yep. Ugh. Made me sad. But I mean, that being said, we handled the lurkers pretty easily. I mean, there was only 3 of them. And you know, starting off, like, they were hitting me for damage, but I was hitting them for damage too, you know, up front. And then y'all had plenty of support. The Mind Thief was doing his stuff too. We took them down pretty easily and moved into the next room.
Yeah. This next one was the same kind of next room was kind of the same approach we had with the Earth Demons, where I jumped in and, like, not too far ahead, but I knew you guys were going to finish them off just to open the door and get it ready and waiting for, like, you two to come in basically to save me once again. It's like, seems to be our general approach.
And you'd like, yeah,
I was going to say, from the purchase that I got from the rewards you got last time, which was the Ring of Skulls, when I kind of wedged myself into a corner and I brought that guy out, which was a 3-hit point skeleton, I believe. He basically blocked the path to allow you guys some more breathing room to run in and start, you know, punching everything where I can, when I can do it.
So this room was already narrow. It's like, it's one of the V-shaped rooms, right? But then to make matters worse, like, half of it was covered in rocks. So it's hard to get anywhere. And it was just a traffic jam up front. So it was hard to kind of, like, Skip couldn't really back up very well. And it was hard for us to get in. I ended up having to use a jump and I jumped over 2 of the 3 enemies in the room and then kind of had to start fighting backwards, but then had another guy coming up behind me. And so while it wasn't too bad, like, we ended up beating them without taking a lot of damage, but we also ended up only halfway through the room when we ended up killing them all. So we had like a couple of awkward turns moving up to the next door. And then, like, Steve needed to stop in long rest, but we didn't want to stop in long rest because it was just going to be a really awkward pacing if we did.
Yeah, this sort of clogged it up and separated us out. I never caught up with you guys again because I also don't have the movement you do. So,
no.
And this is another another prime example of the benefit of jump, because you had to spend a lot of movement to get around this turn.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. With jump, it wasn't a big deal at all. But yeah, you never did catch up, but you were doing your own thing back there. It was fine.
Yep. I had my elite, so I was good to go.
Yeah. The next room had 4 living spirits in it and a frost demon.
These guys were bitches, if I remember correctly.
Which I was happy to see the frost demons too, because I don't think I'd had one of those yet on my list either. I was checking off demons left and right, guys. Skip and I made pretty short work of this room. I jumped in and pushed one of the creatures into a trap, which helped knock his hit points down. And then Skip just started stunning everything in the room, which is really nice of him to do.
Yep.
And then, so we made pretty short work of that room. I think we left like 1 monster in the corner for Steve to deal with when he got around to it. Then Steve just spent time killing that guy and looting. I think he looted a few things that room.
Yep. This was the one we actually delayed a bit, if I remember correctly. So you guys could get more money.
Because the last room had 1 elite living spirit and 1 non-elite. And we killed the non-elite like instantly, I think. And then we're like, Skip and I are like, look, me and you can kind of kill this other dude anytime we want. He's already at like half health. And so I think we stunned him for 1 or 2 rounds while we looted a chest and a bunch of money that was laying on the ground.
It worked out
so,
for me.
Yeah, it was refreshing to be able to just kind of take it easy for a turn or two. And just kind of mop up, which is a reward for a job well done, I suppose. And it made this whole treasure, this treasure map to the shipwreck, well worth it.
So I have a question. You know, listening to you guys describe the two scenarios today, would it seems like the difficulty curve between three and four players, is it that substantial?
No, we just hate you and play bad when you're around.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Yeah. All right. That's fine.
I don't know. It's tough to put a finger on, right? So there's definitely less monsters on the board. And so it's a little easier for us to plan around them. But
I guess you're also doing side scenarios too, so that could have an effect on the difficulty.
It could have an effect on it.
It might just be because like we're used to fighting like four players worth of monsters.
Right.
They were like that level of aggression. And then it turns out to be more than we need for like three players worth of monsters.
Interesting.
And like they're also pretty linear, right? And it's like fight three guys here, go into the next room, fight three guys there, go to the next room, fight three guys there. There wasn't. We're just able to, we just had good pacing in this one in particular.
Yeah.
We were all rested up. We had our good cards going into the rooms.
Did any of the monsters level up when Garrett's with us by any chance? Like, would they have been higher level by any chance?
Okay. We're still playing at level two. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. I'd vote we just blame it on Garrett. And
I mean, if we're looking at all the available evidence, that seems to be the only answer.
Right.
Oh, also, the item we in that that's right. So I went for the treasure chest because I seem to always go for the treasure chest because I guess I'm greedy. And Skip went for all the actual money tokens on the ground, which was a ton. I got an interesting little item, though. I won't give the item number, but ended up with an item called the Doomed Compass, and which is cool. It's kind of thematic, I guess, to get that off a ship. But it lets me pick an enemy within five hexes of me and have him do a move two anywhere I want. Once a scenario, but really nice for springing traps.
It's like a little mini Mind Thief card.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. I use it from time to time. It's not like a game changer, but it's fun to use.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that wraps it up for the two scenarios we did in this session. But we have a lot of post game wrap up on this one.
You guys want to do your levels?
Yeah, we'll do our levels, and then Steve, you can do your thing. Okay. So, Skip, you hit level four.
Yep.
Do you care to take a look-see at your card choices and what you went with?
Okay, so at level four, I believe it was the Cranium Overload was the card. And what it did was it allowed me to kill a normal enemy within one range – or within a range of four, just straight up kill it. But it's a burn card, but each – if there was enemies nearby it, adjacent to it, I would get to do an attack two on them as well. And I got experience for each of those. But the bigger thing was the bottom half, or I guess that's pretty big, but it is a burn card. The nice thing also is that it also gave me a move five on the bottom half of it. So I'm not exactly sure which one I removed to replace it. I think this might have been the one that actually replaced the giant rats, because I had the small rats, or the multitude of rats, I guess, and then the giant rat and the skeleton now. So I felt I was turning my Mind Thief into more of a necromancer, so I kind of pulled one of them out and replaced it with this. And this one has seen a good bit of play just from the move five alone. It gets me places I need to be really fast.
Okay, so I hit level four as well. My choices were pretty straightforward. So I had two options. The first option was Devastating Hack, which the bottom is a loot one, which is just awkward, right? So that means I'm probably not going to be able to move before I loot. Now, granted, I guess I can attack and loot in the same turn, but it seems like an awkward place to put your loot. The top was an attack 8 and 3 XP, but it's a loss. So, like, you get one really good attack with it once, But other than that, it's just an attack two the rest of the game. It's an attack two, move two, unless you're looting or doing your big attack eight. And really, as a brute, I've been able to generate an attack eight and two XP for a single loss since level one if I use the bottom obscure with my boots of striding and balance measure on top. I almost got this exact same card, and that, like, I had that at level one, so that seems a little underwhelming to me at level four. The other card was Unstoppable Charge. This is probably the best card the brute has. It's just the top is just attack five and you get an XP and you don't lose it. Like, the bottom doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter what's on the bottom. Like, I'm taking this card. That's just a consistent attack five every cycle through my cards. It's really good. But looking at the bottom, it is a very situational card. It's a move four for a loss, and it lets you stun every adjacent enemy at the end of the movement. I could see that situation popping up once or twice, and it would be really good to have, but for the most part, I'd rather just punch things really hard. So, but anyway, I took Unstoppable Charge, and I took Provoking Roar out of my deck. Really, the only thing Provoking Roar was doing for me at this point, it had a weak attack on top and in the bottom I never used, but it did have initiative 10. So I hurt my initiative a bit pulling that out and putting Unstoppable Charge in, but greatly increased damage output and XP generation because that's an extra XP I'm getting every time through my deck. So really happy with my level four upgrade. Steve, yep. His post-game stuff is a little more exciting because he retired the first character of the group.
Yeah, I actually misunderstood how the retirement stuff went. So I hit level four in this as well. I'm going to talk about my card choice. Even though I never got to use it because I didn't realize how it worked. But I hit level four and I had a choice between a dangerous contraption or microbots. And I almost immediately shied away from microbots because it was a loss on both upper and lower.
That's hard.
Yeah. Like the upper was more healing, which I had tons of already. And the bottom was like a move and loot. But a one-time move and loot wasn't really worth it to me. The other card at level four, which really appealed, though, was Dangerous Contraption, which the upper is a summon battle bot. It's essentially a decoy that also hits for two now, which nice. I thought was going to be sexy. So I ended up swapping that out for the decoy, which I believe was
and
the
immediately contraption. Retired your character.
Yes, I didn't. Okay, so I think we did like a retirement episode and I talk about it a bit in that. But I thought that the Tinkerer was going to be retired and then if somebody else picked up that player, he would be where I left him off. That turns out not to be the case.
Correct.
So do we want to just make an extra spoiler warning here?
Yeah. So we are about to spoil class number 17. So if you don't want spoilers for class number 17, which you might also know as, I think the code word going around for it on like the Reddit is Phoenix Uterus.
Yep.
It is also the models that have two miniatures. So if you don't want that spoiled, you might want to turn off now. Also, just a heads up, we're playing with this character for the foreseeable future. So he will be a part of future episodes. So keep that in mind too. We'll keep dropping spoiler hints for it, but class 17 is getting spoiled now.
All right, so as you mentioned, there were two boxes in that. I had no idea what this icon was supposed to mean. I was amped. I was hoping it was going to be like a super large figure that you had to snap two pieces together or like ice climbers. I really didn't know what it was going to be. What it turned out being was the Beast Tyrant, which is a tiny little vermling, even smaller than our other vermling, and this massive bear that is longer than the brute is tall. For the sake of doing it in order, whatever, I've named them Rum and Coke. Rum is the bear, obviously, because he packs the punch. The interesting thing about this class, I started like poking through the cards and everything like this. The bear comes in as like an initial summon. You start the scenario, bear pops up in a hex next to you. It doesn't have to be a starting hex. And he's got health dependent on your level. Always swings for two, and he's going to work like a normal summon, but most of the cards also have a command action that let you directly control what the bear is going to do on the Vermling's turn, which was pretty cool. and sliding through some of the cards in just the level one set, I found some pretty game-breaking looking ones. You can swap the positions of two enemies. You can swap the position of two figures, which means we could swap an enemy with one of our characters or one of our summons or whatever. And yeah, the ideas were starting to form about how we could start gaming scenarios using that. I guess I'm not going to talk too much about playstyle until we get into that.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get a good feel for that next session. Did you go ahead and pick up what was your starting equipment? Because you started at level two because we're still at prosperity level two. Yep. And you had, what, 45 gold to buy items with?
45 gold. I ended up buying the minor stamina potion to get the two cards back out of discard. Mm-hmm. And not really much else, because kind of looking through it, I realized most of the items would help the Vermling, but not the bear. And I was kind of going all in on the bear.
The class really should be called Bear and Friend.
Right? That's why rum comes before Coke.
That's right. But yeah, we'll get into all that next session. So that wraps it up for this time. Thank you very much for joining us, guys. And come back next week when we get the title Misadventures really starts coming back next week, because not only is Garrett back, but we are doing quest to help Garrett out to reach retirement. And so things go bad and he's to blame for everything that's going on in the world. And we also get to kick the tires on the Beast Tyrant. So if you guys are curious how that guy plays, definitely come back for next week. Garrett, you want to see us out?
Yeah, as always, Twitter at GPub Radio, Facebook Gamer Public Radio. This is part of our podcast group. You can find our other podcasts where we discuss video games and game development at GamerPublicRadio.com.
You've been listening to Misadventures, a Gloomhaven podcast brought to you by Gamer Public Radio. Please join us every Friday for new episodes at MisadventuresPodcast.com or find us on your podcast application of choice. Music for this podcast is provided by Kevin McLeod. For more of Kevin's work, please check out Incompetech.com. See you next time.